1-2. Peterson hits it in the air to left. Back at the wall. It's gone!
That home run happened in Game 6 of the 2017 World Series. The following episode was recorded in 2012. This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poems that knock it out of the park. You can't really understand America until you understand baseball. I'm not sure if that's true, actually, but that's what I like to say to tweak my European friends. Think about the expressions. They dropped the ball, right? He threw her a curveball. She didn't go to bat for her mother. I'm out here in left field. The language is lousy with baseball metaphors. Anyhow, it's October. The playoffs have begun. So we thought it might be fun to bat around a few poems that revel in baseball. Jim Sitar is the archives editor for our website, poetryfoundation.org. Valerie Johnson is the managing editor of Poetry Magazine. Jim and Val, are you fans? Are you former players? What's going on here?
Well, I'm definitely a fan, and both Jim and I were members of the inaugural Poetry Foundation softball team this summer.
Huh. How did the Poetry Foundation do in softball?
You know, we won a game.
Our game?
Yes.
Well, we'll leave it there. We won't go on. Jim, as the archives editor, do you get the sense that there are a lot more baseball poems than football or basketball poems?
Absolutely. I think baseball has really captured the imagination of poets for, you know, over a century. Baseball is a very old sport. And I think that something has to do with our childhoods and the sports that were important to us when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And I think for so many generations of Americans, that sport has predominantly been baseball.
So the subject of baseball for poetry has a built-in nostalgia factor.
Yeah, I think the poets who choose baseball as the subject of some of their poems are often tapping into some form of nostalgia.
Okay, I've asked you guys to pick out a baseball poem from the archives to read. Jim, you go first. Tell us what you've chosen.
Okay, I've chosen The Baseball Players by Donald Hall. Mm-hmm. Donald Hall is probably one of the biggest baseball fan / poets, big Red Sox fan. He's written a lot about baseball, mm-hmm. Outside and inside of poems. He certainly knows what's going on day to day in the baseball game.
And tell me what appealed to you about this poem before we hear it.
I think that he's in some ways dramatizing the action of baseball. It's so much about anticipating the pitch, anticipating the next play, anticipating whether the ball will be caught or not. And I think that he's doing that in the very language of the poem.
Oh, that's interesting. Go ahead and read The Baseball Players by Donald Hall.
Against the bright grass, the white-knickered players tense, seize, and attend. A moment ago, outfielders and infielders adjusted their clothing, glanced at the sun, and settled forward, hands on knees. The pitcher walked back of the hill, established his cap, and returned. The catcher twitched a forefinger. The batter rotated his bat in a slow circle. But now they pause, wary, exact, suspended, while abiding moonrise lightens the angel of the overgrown garden, and Walter Blake Adams, who died at 14, waits under the footbridge.
Now, there's a sudden elegiac turn in that poem right towards the end. Jim, do you have any idea who Walter Blake Adams was? It seems to be a childhood friend of Donald Hall or something.
That's my guess, and that's the way I interpreted it when I read the poem. Though, of course, I Googled the name Walter Blake Adams just to make sure he wasn't some obscure, you know, shortstop right. for the, you know, 1947 Red Sox or something. I mean, clearly, if he died at 14, he had to be a childhood friend or some tragic figure. You know, the poem turns from this baseball moment into something else, this personal memory.
It's a sudden shift. It's a little shocking, actually, within the context of the poem.
Right. And I think that that's how baseball works. You know, as the pitch is into the air, you never know where it might go.
Yeah. The poem stops a moment in time right before the pitch is thrown. Against the bright grass, the white-knickered players tense, seize, and attend. That's how the poem begins, but then Hall goes back and explains what led up to that moment. A moment ago, outfielders and infielders adjusted their clothing, glanced at the sun, and settled forward, hands on knees. Why does he start at the moment of tension and then back away? Explain what goes on right before.
I think by starting the poem out in a non-chronological order, he's bringing more emphasis to the fact that these are separate moments.
That's one of the things I really love so much about this poem is the recalibrating in the middle there, because I think that that's the experience too when you're playing the game or watching the game. I mean, it's tension and then release of tension. You know, you're at the 3-2 count and then we think we're about to complete an important action and then we have to start over again. And so that constant, you know, recalibrating.
And the word tense in the third line, we aren't sure if it's a verb or an adjective. We aren't sure if it's describing the players or if it's something that the players are doing. And it turns out that they are tensing. It's a verb. But it's not something that we know until after we read that word, after that line. Mm-hmm. And that's that recalibration that Val mentioned.
What do you make of why this dead boy is waiting under the footbridge that comes at the end of the poem? To me, that seems troll-like or something. Why under the footbridge? What is he drawing from there? What memory is he drawing up there?
The poem up until then is filled with images that we can all identify with. They're usual images of baseball. And then it dissolves into, it's something that we can't, I think, as readers make much sense out of. And I think it's supposed to be that way. I think it's supposed to be suspended in that kind of personal significance.
You know, there's a lot of drifting in and out, I think, at baseball games. I mean, first of all, they're long, and there's a lot of times when nothing's happening, and your attention is pulled in a lot of different directions, and I think it's easy to drift off into personal thought or memory. There's a lot of memory, I think, with baseball, and maybe that's just watching it with my husband, who remembers everything, and he's one of these stats people. But everything triggers a memory of something else, especially, you know, with his team. Baseball is evocative of personal memory, it seems to me.
Val, the poem you chose is much longer than the poem Jim chose. It's called simply Baseball, and it's by Gail Mazur. What is it that appealed to you about this baseball poem?
Well, for one thing, I love the portraits of the fans in this poem, also the players. I just think that she paints these great pictures of the different kinds of people you see at a baseball game. But also, and I mean not to play into a stereotype, but she knows baseball. You don't hear a lot of women talk about baseball. You don't see a lot of female commentators in baseball, too. And I just...
No, you don't.
I love how strong and solid her knowledge is in this poem.
So like I said, this is a fairly long poem, so I reserve the right to interrupt you with questions or clarifications as you go along.
Sure.
Can you give it a read?
Absolutely.
So here's Baseball by Gail Mazur.
The game of baseball is not a metaphor, and I know it's not really life. The chalky green diamond, the lovely dusty brown lanes I see from airplanes multiplying around the cities are only neat playing fields. Their structure is not the frame of history carved out of forest. That is not what I see on my ascent.
So that's her argument right here. Baseball is not a metaphor for life. Although the poem is out to disprove her own argument in a way.
Right.
Go ahead.
And down in the stadium, the veteran catcher guiding the young pitcher through the innings, the line of concentration between them, that delicate filament is not like the way you are helping me.
Now let me interrupt here. Suddenly we have you. Who is you all of a sudden? A mentor or a lover?
I think it is unclear, although I read it as it could be either of those, maybe both.
Yeah. Anyhow, back up and continue, please.
That delicate filament is not like the way you are helping me. Only it reminds me when I strain for analogies, the way a rookie strains for perfection, and the veteran, in his wisdom, seems to promise it. It glows from his upheld glove.
So in that stanza, she considers the players, and now she moves on to consider the other fans in the grandstand with her. Go on.
And the man in front of me in the grandstand, drinking banana daiquiris from a thermos, continuing through a whole dinner to the aromatic cigar even as our team is shut out, nearly hitless. He is not like the farmer that Auden speaks of in Bruegel's Icarus.
Let me stop you there. That Auden reference is to some lines in his great poem, Musée des Beaux-Arts, where a farmer kind of indifferently notices Icarus falling from the sky into the ocean and continues on with his work. And I think here she's suggesting that this fan, even though he's through his daiquiris, is paying very close attention to what is going on out there. He's not like that farmer, not paying attention. Anyhow, go on.
He is not like the farmer that Auden speaks of in Bruegel's Icarus, or the four inevitable women-hating drunkards yelling, hugging each other and moving up and down continuously for more beer, and the young wife trying to understand what a full count could be to please her husband happy in his old dreams, or the little boy in the Yankees cap already nodding off to sleep against his father, program and popcorn memories sliding into the future, and the old woman from Lincoln, Maine, screaming at the Yankee slugger with wounded knees to break his leg. This is not a microcosm, not even a slice of life.
So there she restates her argument, saying this is not a metaphor for all of life, and then goes on to disprove it again. Go ahead.
And the terrible slumps, when the greatest hitter mysteriously goes hitless for weeks, or the pitcher's stuff is all junk who threw like a magician all last month, or the days when our guys look like Senate cops, slipping, bumping each other, then suddenly, the play that wasn't humanly possible, the kid we know isn't ready for the big leagues, leaps into the air to catch a ball that should have gone downtown, and coming off the field is hugged and bottom-slapped by the sudden sorcerers, the winning team. The question of what makes a man slump when his form, his eye, his power aren't to blame. This isn't like the bad luck that hounds us, and his frustration in the games not like our deep rage for disappointing ourselves. The ballpark is an artifact, manicured, safe, seen in an Easter egg. And the order of the ballgame, the firm structure with the mystery of accidents always contained, not the wild field we wander in, where I'm trying to recite the rules, to repeat the statistics of the game, and the wind keeps carrying my words away.
So at the end of the poem, she starts referring to us and we, and I couldn't help but think there does seem to be some implicit comparison between baseball and writing here. At the very end of the poem, she says, where I'm trying to recite the rules, to repeat the statistics of the game, and the wind keeps carrying my words away.
I think that, you know, her initial assertion that the game of baseball is not a metaphor, and it's almost as though she's struggling to avoid the metaphor by falling, you know, I mean, it's structured so beautifully where she falls into seeing it as a metaphor, and then she catches herself and tries to reassert it not being, you know, a metaphor, and the idea of trying to look at it as a sport, as an escape from life, but you see your own daily footpath in that game.
Mm-hmm. So both these poems are up on the website. They're actually part of a poem sampler about baseball. You can just find it by typing in baseball in the search engine. Is there a greatest baseball poem that we should all recognize and acknowledge as the greatest baseball poem?
Well, I'm going to turn this over to Jim, but I will say that in the studio here, we both just look at each other and we didn't roll our eyes, but we both sort of put our head up because I think we're thinking the same thing, but I'll turn it over to Jim to comment on this.
All right.
Well, I looked through our archive to edit this poem sampler on baseball poems. And what I found is that baseball poems, you know, in the 1800s, late 1800s, are often kind of built around legends, legendary players, legendary moments, big, heroic, epic scenes.
Right.
Casey at the Bat, for example.
Yes.
Or Franklin Pierce Adams' poem, A Ballad of Baseball Burdens, which is probably the second most famous baseball poem. It's the poem about Tinkers to Evans to Chance. It's the three infielders of the Cubs in the 1910s, known for turning a lot of double plays. Mm. And as modernism filters through our experiences and our writing, many of the poems focus more on those minor moments or the human aspects of the sport or on the fans of the sport or the moments between plays, as the Donald Hall poem did and parts of the Mazur poem. So it becomes less about these heroic figures and more about how we interact with the game.
Mm-hmm. So you're evading my question, though, You don't want to admit that Casey at Bat is the world's greatest baseball poem.
I would say it's the most famous.
It's the most famous, know? Yes.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, greatest is a dangerous moniker to use for anything.
That was an archival episode of Poetry Off the Shelf from 2012. Jim Sidar is now senior editor at the Poetry Foundation. Valerie Johnson was the managing editor for Poetry Magazine. Check out the baseball sampler on our website by typing baseball poems in the search bar. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.